Woke up this morning with light in my eyes, and then realized it was still dark outside. It was a light coming down from the sky. I don't know who or why. Must be those strangers that come every night. Those saucer-shaped lights put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
If you told me, when I took this job, that one day I would be publishing a long story about UFOs, I probably would have guessed we were talking about some sort of humor piece by Patty Marks or Ian Fraser. I wouldn't have imagined that we'd be publishing thousands and thousands of words on serious government programs investigating UFOs, or quoting officials on the record to the effect that UFOs are a pressing issue of national security. But times change. And Gideon Lewis Krause, a staff writer, has just published exactly that kind of piece in The New Yorker.
I don't know how you came by this record, but you are now embarked upon a journey that must certainly lead you to change your life forever. If you were never a special person, you are a special person now. Hello, seeker. Now don't feel alone here in the new age, because there's a seeker born every minute. Yes, I'm Dr. Happy Harry Cox, and call me happy because I am. Because you're listening to another in a series of my mind-breaking records, Men Never Lived on Earth, which started off with I Came From Outer Space, followed by Strangers at Our Door, which includes the ultra-high-speed recording of real gas music from Jupiter. If you haven't got them, buy them now. I was right about the comet. Get them and see why. Write me here in my award-winning communication trailer, Space Nyan, Blue Mouse Trailer Resort, Hellmouth, California, 90666.
Here's Gideon.
One afternoon in mid-April, I was at the playground with my son when I got a frantic text message from one of my sources. Breaking huge UFO news, it said. And there was a link to a website that had a series of photos. And a video of some green glowing triangles against the starry night sky. At this point, I'd been working on a story about UFOs for 4 or 5 months, and it wasn't so unusual for me to get these kinds of texts with these kinds of links to grainy footage of dubious provenance. But what was really weird about the triangle video was what happened the next day. The Pentagon came out and said yes, in fact, this was ours. The video was allegedly shot from the deck of the USS Russell off the coast of San Diego in 2019. In the weeks since, some people have cast doubt on the video, and it probably doesn't show a UFO. But the point of the story is, the triangle video made international headlines.
In night vision video from a Navy destroyer, a mysterious flying triangle above the deck of the ship. The Pentagon confirming the images obtained by documents.
All of a sudden, UFOs were something that people talked about.
Guys. Okay, that's crazy.
You know, I don't want to say I don't believe because I don't want them to come prove me wrong.
I like those colors. Isn't that nice?
Nice. Can you get UHF?
No, I don't believe in flying saucers. A little blue halo around my head.
For the first time in decades, it had once again become perfectly reasonable to admit that you were interested in UFOs.
You know, it's kind of like you can chase your tail on this story.
John Podesta was chief of staff in the Clinton White House, and then he served as an advisor to President Obama. And for a long period of time, he was one of the few visible public officials who was willing to speak out about government transparency and UFOs.
I think it was sort of viewed as a career-ending event, that you'd be viewed as someone who is a little bit nutty. People would accuse you of seeing little green men around the corner, so people avoided it.
Over the last few years, there's been an enormous and rapid change in the way the government addresses the UFO topic. And all of that is expected to culminate this June, when the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force is expected, with the participation of the Director of National Intelligence and the Secretary of Defense, to produce a report about what the government does and does not know about UFOs.
I give Senator Reid a lot of credit for this.
Harry Reid, the former Senate Majority Leader.
He pushed to have the Pentagon start a small program to basically collect the information. And lo and behold, there was information collected, and then it was released. And I think Leslie Kane, her dogged reporting on the issue, had something to do with it.
Dogs flew spaceships. The Aztecs invented the vacation. Men and women are the same sex. Our forefathers took drugs. Your brain is not the boss.
Yes, yes,
that's right.
Everything you know is wrong.
Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe that pigs live in trees and that faithful Rover is nothing but a pet sleeping by the doggy door. Well, doggone it, he's smarter than you'll ever be. Yes, I've got proof here that his ancestors came from the dog star millions of years ago to rule the Earth. He's been there. And you probably don't even know where you are. Don't believe it? Well, listen to this.
Well, first I thought it was a big old dog, because of the way it howled and how it had them big friendly eyes. But I had to ask myself what the hell was it doing up in the graveyard, digging up the ground with a shovel. Thought I was crazy. I'm not a drinking man on duty, Mr. Cox, not me. You know, I figured it was one of them werewolves we were having, so I slipped a wooden load in my shotgun, and then all of a sudden, now this is going to sound crazy, a big dark shape with flashing lights come up over the top of the hill. That went right over there. It's about 100 miles an hour. This dog, a wolf, or whatever it was, it took off like a bug rabbit with that dry hump over there. Hey, Deputy, just a minute, will you? And I'm not a drinking man, Mr. Cox. I swear to hell I saw it.
That was no crazed sterno bum, but a respected law enforcement officer, Sheriff Luger Axhandle of Heater County, California. And that wooden marker over the grave where the creature was digging? It bore a mysterious inscription. Much faded with time and wormholes, it read, "No name, died 1897, with this curious epitaph, not from around here, but a real square little feller." Now, I tracked down this story to Lem Ashhaller, who's editor of the Hellmouth Heater Democrat.
Oh, back here someplace. Y'all are published monthly back then. Uh-huh. There's a lot happening, you know.
Oh, 1897.
It's a big yellow jacket epidemic.
Oh, really?
That was very fashionable in those days.
April 19th.
Yeah, it's a bunch of funny storms. Uh-huh. Wait a minute. 19th. Here it is. April 19th, 1897. Strange occurrence at Proctor's Well. Yeah, all this story pops up about every 10 years or so. Happened over in Curio, Arizona, about 20 miles the other side of the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Came, oh,
here it is. Came crawling out of a well wearing lady's shoes.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know what milk was. Repeated everything anybody said.
Anybody said.
Well, I'm reading it. Real little, smooth like baby's feet, with big friendly eyes. He sounds like a real nice guy. Took him to the Swiss picnic for a good time, and he choked to death on a piece of cheese. And then it's the end of the story.
Curio, Arizona, crumbling remnant of the Old West, or could it be the final resting place of a little guy from outer space? Could be, could be. All I know is everything you know is wrong.
It might seem astonishing that the culture has become so open to the UFO conversation. But when the sightings first began, roughly speaking in the late 1940s or so, they weren't dismissed so quickly. This was the beginning of what Leslie calls the golden age of UFOs. In 1947 alone, there were close to 1,000 official sightings.
Airline pilots with thousands of hours' experience have reported saucers coming within a few hundred feet of their planes. matching speed briefly, and then darting off at supersonic speed, leaving a glowing exhaust trail.
In 1947 alone, there were close to 1,000 sightings.
They hung there in the sky, and they were, to us, had the appearance of tubes of fluorescent light.
The U.S. was in the grip of a flying saucer mania.
A beautiful, silvery, pink-tinged moonlight.
This is Edward R. Murrow. We're going to talk about flying saucers.
The prevailing scientific attitude was that UFOs didn't exist because they couldn't exist.
I'm the urban spaceman, baby, but here comes the twist. I don't exist.
My thought is simply that the ability of some people to kid themselves is extraordinary.
But it was also the beginning of the Cold War, and members of the military, at least in private, took it much more seriously than they were generally willing to let on.
So Lieutenant General Nathan Twining was the commander of Air Force Material Command, so he was a high-level Air Force guy. And he sent a memo around, and the title of the memo was Flying Discs.
This was a lieutenant general in the Air Force, who later went on to become chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
He stated that the phenomenon, this is the line that's really famous from this memo, the phenomenon reported is something real and not visionary or fictitious.
Here's the official stolen government training film of the secret plan to deal with an alien uprising.
Classified, ultra secret, Air Force generals only. Ten hut! At ease, men, take your seat.
This is General Curtis Goathart. If you are viewing this film, then we are under extraterrestrial attack. Beware. Your brain may no longer be the boss. If you are beginning to doubt what I am saying, you are probably hallucinating. Listen carefully.
What to do if an alien appears? One.
Drop under the seat of your plane and look away.
Two.
Avoid eye contact.
Three.
If there are no eyes, avoid all contact.
How to identify alleged sightings? One.
Pie plates or as reflections in the atmosphere.
Two.
Dry cleaning bags filled with marsh gas or...
Three.
Mass insanity.
How to inform your wife and others under your command.
Can I push that up for you?
I don't know how she got that requisition.
Oh, she gets it. She gets it in the car.
Well, she's not allowed to have it.
Honey,
she's related to the
honey.
He's like PX, though.
Well, General?
Honey and men, I have something awesome to reveal to you.
Oh, well, go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
Two flying saucers have just landed on my plate.
Well, turn away, sir. I'll eat them.
Good thing.
Men, our greatest fear is realized. We are under attack from superior consciousness.
The eggs, sir?
They're only the beginning. All right, men. Questions?
Sir?
Yes, Major?
Pass the syrup, General?
That's a good idea, Chuck. But syrup won't stop them.
But,
next.
Sir?
Colonel?
Are you nuts?
That is just exactly what they want you to believe.
The, eggs, sir?
Let's just call them the phenomena.
Well, if I may respectfully submit, sir, I think you've got your phenomena scrambled, General.
What about my eggs, dear?
Honey, they're in everybody's eggs.
Good Lord. You're crying, you know. Perhaps you'd like another cup of coffee to settle down a bit.
Conclusion!
They think he is insane. Yet, he outranks them. His option, command.
One.
He seals off the area.
Two.
Secures the cooperation of local officials.
Three.
Obtains expert scientific assistance.
Four.
Evacuates all government employees.
Five.
And bombs aliens back to Stone.
End of film.
So it was that memo that led to the founding of Project Blue Book.
Project Blue Book ran from 1952 through the end of 1969. And for the first few years, at least, it really did try to chase down what was going on with these sightings.
In Washington, ghost-like objects dart across the radar screen at the CAA Traffic Control Center at National Airport for several hours, traveling more than 100 miles...
The National Archives have 37 cubic feet of cases from Project Blue Book. Each cubic foot is about 2,000 pages.
General Sanford, Air Force Intelligence Director, confirms that the objects are not secret American weapons and reiterates the Air Force's obligation to investigate.
Since 1947, we have received and analyzed between 1 and 2,000 reports that have come to us from all kinds of sources. Of this great mass of reports, we have been able adequately to explain the great bulk of them, explain them to our own satisfaction. However, there have been a certain percentage of this volume of reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
By the time it shut down, Project Blue Book had logged more than 12,000 cases. In the end, 701 of them remained officially unexplained. That's an average of about 40 cases for every year that the project ran. My understanding, and I think I drew this from your book, is that the view of at least many influential high-level officials was that it wasn't that UFOs themselves were the problem, it was that the UFO reports were the problem. That there were too many UFO reports, and that Blue Book had to do something to handle just that volume of UFO reports.
Yes, the concern about all the reports and all the attention was really an issue, and that's why the CIA convened this panel in 1953 called the Robertson Panel, in which they sort of set up a policy to debunk UFOs. And that was sort of that's when the train left the station in terms of this sense of ridicule that goes through decade after decade after decade, but it was kind of put in place by the CIA panel.
So the CIA was working actively to undermine the belief in UFOs. But by then, a fascination with flying saucers had become just part of the culture.
I have a secret agent, you know.
Do you?
He keeps getting me jobs in the CIA.
That's great, Louis.
Hey, I got a great part for you, shooting a movie down in Mexico.
You're going to do the shooting.
That's
you
right.
Pick up your gun from the guy in the red tie at the Waldorf Astoria.
But my business manager, Marvin Ratman, tells me that everything is okay. He says that the check for $36 I got last week has been put into the Swiss bank under his name to protect me. He says that way that they can't trace it or anything.
Marvin.
Yeah.
Marvin recruited 50% of his agents, you know, new agents at least, from the officer corps in Vietnam, you know.
Did he? Is that why?
Yeah, he gets a man who's been in command of men, and he can use his good judgment. And they all have they're above average in personal appearance, no hippies, no sideburns a la Namath,
yeah,
and all that sort of stuff.
Guys,
the public has an image of what an FBI agent should look like. Hoover runs the biggest agency. The Hoover runs the FBI
Hoof,
agency. Want a job?
The Hoover.
Hey,
the
50, want a job?
The biggest 15%er of them all,
you want
man.
A job, right?
The Who.
Come on up to CMA, William Morris, FBI. Who are you with?
My father really did give me information on the CIA because he thought it would be a good service for me to get involved with.
Did he really?
Yes, he really did.
Do they have a recruiting program?
Yes.
For the
they
CIA?
Come on the Yale campus when
sure.
I was there, man.
Uh-huh.
There would be, along with like two things you could see, along with all the other jobs that were offered. One was Donald Duck Law Firm of Indianapolis. There is one of the largest,
yes.
most conservative law firms in all of Indianapolis is Donald Duck and Associates.
That's right.
And also you'd say the Central Intelligence Agency is having job appointment
Wait.
Interviews. Yes. No put on, man. No put on.
The Donald Duck Law Firm?
Donald Duck and Associates. In Indianapolis, and we'll get a letter when
and
we syndicate this.
And you laughed at me when I confused Ferdy Griffin and Elmer Fudd.
Well, they're rich and powerful men, and it's dangerous to confuse them. Donald Duck and Associates are just simple lawyers in Indianapolis, man. They don't have any power or ability to terrorize people outside of the city limits. Just little guys.
The government commission was based out of the University of Colorado. It was headed up by a scientist named Edward Condon, who was a very prominent figure. He was a nuclear physicist. Condon made it quite clear, long before the study was completed, that he thought this whole UFO business was absolute bunk.
Shadow Valley Condoms, if you lived here, you'd be home by now.
Antelope Hill, selected living, comfortable, easy, okay. Dr. Condon, what sorts of things do you think people will be reporting to you that they're seeing?
Well, I presume the same sort of things that they have been reporting for the last 20 years, and those are some bright stars and meteors and the moon shining through clouds and...
By the time the Condon Report appeared in 1969, its conclusions were foreordained. But the report itself is something really strange. It's over 1,000 pages long, and the only parts that Professor Condon wrote were the summary and the recommendations and conclusions. And it almost seemed like he hadn't read the rest of it. Because of the 90 Blue Book cases that the Condon Committee chose to look up, 30 of them remained at the end unexplained. One of them was attributed to a mechanical device of unknown origin under intelligent control. There was nothing about the Condon report that suggested that the phenomenon should be dismissed out of hand, and yet that was Condon's recommendation, that there was no reason to entertain further scientific study, that nothing would be gained by the study of unidentified flying objects, and that it's something the government should just leave alone.
It was like, you know, putting the nail in the coffin.
That's journalist Leslie Kane again.
And so anybody from then on who wanted to stay away from it could just cite the Condon report.
Hi.
Hi. All right. You think that there's some sort of genetic motive, motive behind all they are doing with human abduction. Is that correct?
Well, not just that.
From that point on, UFO discourse was dominated by talk of alien abductions, alien corpses, secret hangars at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, ancient alien astronauts, alien bases under the sea, massive government conspiracies, the Majestic 12, a group of 12 men who had been convened in secret by President Truman in the interest of national security to protect Americans from our true secret dealings with galactic civilizations.
And I'd like to welcome here to Neptune All Night, George Tirebarter. Thank you very much. I understand you're the only science fiction filmmaker ever to stage a movie on Neptune. Why Neptune, George?
Well, Sedge, it's wonderful to be with you on this historic occasion. It's not much easier to get my voice to you from Washington State than it is to get the signals from Neptune. But I'm pleased to discuss this old film of mine with you. This was during the early 1950s. There was a great cycle of those classic movies like Destination Moon and Invaders from Mars, you know, and so there was a tremendous rush to bring out these alien space travel movies. The plots were, you know, we go there or they come here, pretty much. That was it. And they'd used up the moon pretty well. They had the big sound stage set over at Paranoid Pictures. They did those lunar landings with Mr. Armstrong there, I think, years later. It looked just like it anyway. But, Mars Is Ours. I did that as a serial for Captain Equinox. He was sort of our Commando Cody, a hero type. He wore a safari suit, a football helmet, dark glasses, you know. And he had a reverse twist on that War of the Worlds idea. We go get them before they come and get us. It was a kind of a Cold War science fiction movie. That was very good. And we had Catwomen of Venus, sort of a sleazy jungle movie. Venus was supposed to be covered with a rainforest. That's what all those pulp writers we hired at a penny a word, they told us that. They did Radar Zombies. The Radar Zombies were from the cold side of Mercury. They wore ski parkas with little flashlights for their eyes. And there was Atomic Invaders from Planet X. There was Texas Rangers versus the Ring People from Saturn. We were running very low on planets, Sedge. That was how I came to Neptune.
Well, what about Pluto?
Oh, Pluto. Well, Walt Disney had a copyright on Pluto. Who'd come to see They Came from Pluto, anyway? It sounds like a cartoon about singing ticks. that left Neptune and Jupiter. And, of course, that other planet that no one can pronounce the name of. I wouldn't even want to say it, not now.
No, you don't even want to try to mispronounce it, no.
No, frankly, Sedge, you know, I think we'd have been a lot better off if they'd called that planet Herschel. Doesn't that have a nice ring to it? Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Herschel, Neptune, and Pluto. Astrologers would have a good time with that, too, I think. Well, your Herschel is a retrograde in the fourth house, which...
means to expect a surprise visit from your brother-in-law, I suppose, or something like that. Anyway.
George.
Gas music from Jupiter. That was a musical from Metro. They made it in true color. It wasn't, of course. It was seafoam green. And red, the color of the stuffing in jelly donuts, you know. They showed it all the worst movie marathons. Well, so it was up to me, Sedge. I was blacklisted. I was writing under an assumed name, George Typewriter, at the smallest and most pathetic studio in Culver City. What choice did I have? None. So I wrote 13 episodes of Nomads from Neptune, one of the last serials ever made.
Well, what did Neptune look like in your movie, George? We're seeing... pictures now. What did it look like in your film?
Well, oddly enough, I'm seeing these same pictures, and it looked quite similar to what we're seeing now. A big, fuzzy, blue ball. Wait a minute. Maybe that's Pete Rose I'm looking at. No, that's Triton. I've been watching a lot of television today. Well, we had one of those arousing science fiction magazine cover artists did paintings for us, and he just came up with this blue ball. It was quite nice. Also, the female costumes, they were very nice, too. Well, but the trick was, now, let me tell you this. We knew that Triton, this moon, it went backward in its orbit. So I landed Commander Mark Time, official representative of the Circumsolar Federation, on Triton, which had been going backward for so long that it worked just like a time machine. Triton flung Mark forward into the past.
Very clever plotting. Was there an alien indeed. Monster in your film?
Oh, George? Alien monsters all over the place. But we had a very small budget for those kinds of things. It was from this movie that expression that you may have heard, worser than a Neptunian Nessie, came from. Nessie was a sort of a methane sea monster that leaped in and out of those gas bergs up there on Triton. Made entirely out of cheesecloth dipped in cream of wheat. Mm-hmm. Not much money for special effect.
Well, I haven't seen Nomads from Neptune, George. I assume it's in an archive somewhere nowadays?
Oh, well, here's the end of the story, Sedge. It's lost forever. The entire archive of Master Prince from Monarch Studios destroyed, completely destroyed by fire, a raging brush fire on Mulholland Drive, burned to the ground. The great structure which housed these priceless prints. It was a two-car garage belonging to an old-time director of those B-movies, a fellow named Spencer Bennett. No, I'm afraid that Nomads from Neptune was released only once in 1955 on a double bill with Arizona Serenade. It starred Tim McCoy and, I don't know, either Abbott and Costello or Ronnie Reagan. It may be both of them. I don't know.
Well, George, we look forward also to hearing more of this in your biography when it comes out. I want to thank you for joining us, Hollywood legend George Typewriter.
Well, thank you, Sedge, and a fond farewell to that little Voyager wherever it goes now.
You've been a surrogate mother for aliens three times.
At least. I think it's more like seven times.
Seven times?
Yeah.
Wow.
All of this stuff is what dominates UFO discussions for the next 50 years. Until 2017, when Leslie Kane dropped her bombshell report. In October of 2017, you were called to a hotel bar near the Pentagon.
Not really a bar, but anyway. A hotel lobby space
near the Pentagon. And who was there and what did you learn?
Well, the main reason for that meeting was for me to meet Luis Elizondo, who was the former head of the Department of Defense program, and Christopher Mellon, who was a former Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence at the Pentagon, was there, and a former CIA person. And it was at that meeting that I was first shown the videos, the three videos that eventually came out, as well as a lot of documents that established the reality of the program.
This man, Luis Elizondo, was a former counterintelligence officer. He'd been running a secret program at the Pentagon for years studying UFOs. That program had begun in 2007. When Nevada Senator Harry Reid had found $22 million in black money appropriations to set up an investigation into the reality of the phenomenon.
Well, I came to the realization, in spite of all my staff telling me to stay the hell away from it, that it was something that had to be done.
That's Harry Reid.
I think it would have been a legislative malpractice for me not to get involved. And in hindsight, it hasn't hurt me politically. In fact, I can go today in one of the hotels here in Vegas and someone will say, "Are you Harry Reid?" And I'll say, "Yes." And they'll say, "Thank you very much for your work on flying saucers."
The program that Reid funded did a lot of things, but one of its chief preoccupations was looking into the futuristic technologies that would have to be behind a UFO with the sorts of flight characteristics that had been observed. The operative question was, if you were the Pentagon and wanted to build your own flying saucer, how would you go about doing that?
And there were lots of people at higher levels who made it difficult for them, who didn't think this was appropriate, that they were even studying it. People had attitudes. There were also people who had religious attitudes about this, who had a lot of power, who didn't believe that UFOs were something that we should be studying for religious reasons. So,
right, because they think that they could be demons.
Demonic or something like that.
Hello, friends. I'm Gary Firesign for Mr. Yamamoto of Hollywood.
And for a working man like myself, the price is right.
Yes, our triple year-end sale is going on now. My name isn't Wilson.
Or mine.
You see, I don't think you can run a business like ours without satisfaction to the customer.
It locks on its side like a criminal minnow.
People say to me, "Eddie, the sincerest form of flattery, I guess you call it, is imitation."
Too bad, Steve, but that's just our little joke.
The dog isn't for sale.
Not since Ralph was arrested have I been able to offer you a demon at this sensational price.
The president said move these demons, and golly, I just can't afford not to.
And you don't have to dress up like Mr. Ebbs for friends. There's no suit over $30.
Now that a major clothing manufacturer has closed its doors on
a substance known as adenosine phosphate, crucial to hair growth.
And no display in their warehouse behind the store.
And I wouldn't let my wife drive them after what
the president said about Ralph. I'm sitting down on the dog now because I wouldn't want to spoil your movie. Some call it a commercial, but I like to call it thanks for the interruption and whatever.
Ever kill, dog does, he's not for sale.
That's just our little joke.
I'd like to show you some pictures of men and women like yourselves in this area. Men and women like yourselves in various poses, sitting
on the cars late at night when even Fletcher is gone. Yes, Fletcher must sleep sometimes.
I couldn't stand on my head to give you a better deal, so I think I'll just sit down here to rest my back. There are so many of these
demons here now for me to be entirely.
And the puppy, well, I like to call him your friend and mine, my dog Storm, and he's
not for sale. Everything else certainly is.
The president arrested Ralph.
There are more demons on the left than a week ago. They're piling up. We can't
get rid of them, and there's no one to talk to.
Not even this little fella here. I like to call him your friend and my friend, my dog Storm, their second.
He's not
for sale.
Like people in this area, men and women.
Like your
so I'll just sit down here and wait for them to come and get me. And this fella here, who I like to call Stuffed. He's not
for sale.
Millions are just like him.
Like men and women, making a fortune.
Selling stuffed dogs. As the streets
become a demon.
I'd like to call him Storm.
But they won't let me.
This was the swamp gas case.
The swamp gas case near Ann Arbor, Michigan in March of 1966 was a pivotal moment.
The most spectacular sighting was last Sunday night when witnesses say a mysterious lighted object spent several hours in the swampland behind this pasture.
More than 100 people reported it.
Its third appearance in less than a week.
This guy, there's an amazing video of this witness.
Are you sorry now that you did tell people what you saw?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry because it's not the truth, but it's just the idea, the reaction of the people. They think you're a nut, tell you the truth. That's just what they figure you are. And I'm not going to take it no more. I don't want nobody down in here. I just leave me alone. And if the thing lands right there by that pump, I'd never say a word.
Project Blue Book's in-house scientist, the astronomer J. Allen Hynek, was dispatched to investigate. He found a community in a state of what he called near hysteria.
And the lights were still fluctuating and seemed to be rotating, and it was hovering. And then we saw three lights that went...
Under pressure to avert panic, he called a press conference at which he said that the orbs that had been seen were mistaken cases of the planet Venus or other astronomical bodies, and that other things could be explained by the spontaneous decomposition of vegetation, or what he called marsh gas.
I want it clearly understood that I'm not making a blanket statement to cover the entire UFO phenomenon over the past 20 years in this and other countries.
Doctor, could you face this way more?
Yeah, all right.
Thank you.
I emphasize in conclusion that I cannot prove in a court of law that marsh gas is the full explanation of these sightings.
Attention, humanlings and Earthoids, up where you are. Do not try to reserve. We have come from the 211th, from the 211th sector, from the early quadrant of what you call the sky. Our name is from Warpool. Surrender, slaves. You have been the cruel masters of Earth long enough.
Listen to the law.
Hey, lettuce, many frogs shall lead you. Oh, the symbol of oppressing will be removed. All must learn to play the piano.
Many of us.
XX, you must get yourself together.
Rooms
will be vacated at 12 noon.
Enough of this deception and trickery. I admit it. I was taken in too by clever fakes like this. Gas music from Jupiter indeed. Well, I've been up all night. I've got the real story for you up to now. Proof and everything. The aliens have landed among us. I'm not hot dogging you. We've got to start protecting ourselves.
But it does appear to me extremely likely. I am, after all, an astronomer and not a chemist.
It was inevitable that there was going to be a clash between a public who generally believed in the existence of UFOs and a government whose official policy was one of skepticism. Swamp gas became a kind of shorthand for official contempt. Gerald Ford, who was then the House Minority Leader, was outraged on behalf of his constituents. He thought that this was an affront to their dignity, and he called for congressional hearings to look into whatever it was that was going on. He thought that the Air Force explanations that had been provided were clearly insufficient.
Mr. Secretary, there have been charges that the Air Force is hiding something in the UFO field. What is that, if anything?
We have not been hiding anything.
And by the end of that summer, it was determined that some independent outside body should be commissioned to get to the bottom of whatever was going on.
I think some of the phenomena we're going to be seeing continues to be unexplained.
John Brennan, the former CIA director.
And could involve some type of activity that some might say constitutes a different form of life.
John Ratcliffe, the former director of National Intelligence.
There are a lot more sightings than have been made public. Some of those have been declassified. When we talk about sightings, we're talking about objects that have been seen by Navy or Air Force pilots or have been picked up by satellite imagery.
Senators like Mark Warner and Marco Rubio were briefed on all this stuff.
Listen, this bar doesn't serve anything but 69-cent bar scotch. That's all you get here.
It's good?
It's terrible.
I tell you something. I took 43 drinks waiting to get on a plane from Burbank to Oxnard yesterday.
Yeah, I've waited down. That's an interplanetary airport, central. Yes,
right, Contrapole. Yeah, well, it's as close as possible to where I live, if you want to call that a living.
I understand. 65 drinks, if
it's 48, actually.
That was a good year for bar scotch.
I was absolutely destroyed. I got up to 20,000 feet, and I began to see people with weapons in the plane. Right. Well, they were there, of course.
Oh, well.
But you can't see them until you get that.
All right. Is everybody here now? I think we can begin.
The president has asked us...
President?
...to write...
God bless the president.
All right, Fred, I know we
God
all...
God bless the president.
All right. All right. Please, gentlemen. Gentlemen, please. Is this microphone on here, please? The president has asked us to communicate with those countries who are presently growing marijuana and poppies. I know, Jimmy, that you're going to say that the artificial poppies that you give out as part of the veterans program will be affected by this. It is not true. You cannot smoke those.
No, we never.
They are inflammable, as a matter of fact. We never.
Turn his microphone
thank on. You
thank
you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Right. As we never have we never smoke any of those poppies
right.
at all. They're
right.
there for medicinal purposes and are to
right.
be swallowed whole,
anyway,
except for the little seed.
I think we should all get behind this effort and push him over the top and get these countries, these nasty countries, to stop growing this stuff so that we can get a market on it here at home.
I think that's Lucky Strike Green is going to hit the streets, right?
Keep the problem in the pockets of the businessmen. That's what I say.
You better believe it, friend.
And let's back the president all the way up there.
I backed him yesterday into the swimming pool, and I nearly lost all of my senatorial privileges. For example, I can't go to the electric wee-wee room anymore.
Yes.
Oh, that's since the French have come, right?
Yes.
Ever since they started speaking German on the first floor, I can't get anything worthwhile to eat except a little beer brat.
Have any of you tried to run the maze on the fifth floor?
No.
I can't. They wouldn't give me a key to the fifth floor.
That's where they keep the secretary.
I live in an office that used to be Ralph Nader's.
Oh, no. Really? That is a Nader. That's a pun. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, gentlemen. I think that's
really
enough
sorry.
For today. Let's all retire into the retirement room and have a little drinky-drinky.
Yeah.
So, Senator, what about that? What can you tell us about UFOs?
Well, we have things flying over military installations, over military exercises, and other places. And we don't know what it is. It isn't ours. It isn't anything that's registered with the FAA. And in many cases, exhibits attributes of things we've never seen, technology, the kinds of technology we haven't seen before, or at least that's what it seems like. I think you have to know what it is, or we have to try to know what it is. That's my view of it. Without any preconceived notions, maybe there's a logical explanation. Maybe it's something that can be explained away. Maybe it's a foreign adversary who's made a technological leap. Whatever it is, we need to know the answer to it.
That's a former serious presidential candidate talking.
All right, ladies and gentlemen of the press. Today we're going to address two of your criticisms of the administration.
Oh.
Secrecy on missile defense and support for the arts.
Yeah.
Let's kick it off by welcoming poet Beat Street Jack.
Yeah, thank you, General. Any questions? Well, I'm still sober.
Barney Brown, New York Times, sir.
Yeah.
Suddenly, when the Star Wars program has come under increased scrutiny, the administration decides to wrap everything in a cloak of secrecy. Mm. How come?
Well, let me answer that in the form of a Buddhist haiku, slightly modified. Rocket soars to meet its mark. Be still. Experts are at work.
Oh, thank you. That was beautiful and right on target, Jack. Please direct your next question to the acclaimed insane action painter, Billy Flanagan.
Go ahead, boys. Hit me.
Jordan Crossing, Miami Herald. The administration is claiming that releasing missile test results will advantage terrorists. So, what do we do?
What do we do? You do what I did. You start with a blank canvas, see? First, you create the United States with some red, some white, and a big pot of blue. Ah, look at America. Beautiful, open, naive, drippy, unsuspecting. Now, look here. I pick up some dark paint, the sneaky terrorists. There's murky. Ooh, here's dark and ugly. That nasty sight, isn't it?
Yeah.
But this can of paint thinners our secret missile defense system. Ooh. You launch it here and here. It's very secretly here. And the terrorists are wiped out. You look at them run.
Oh, a very persuasive demonstration, Billy. And that painting would look great in my living room. Matches my wife. Now, please direct your final inquiry to an artist for whom there are no words, mime Shelley Smith. She'll answer your questions as a charade, and I'll translate for her.
Gabby Lopez, Los Angeles Times. Look, missile defense has been a colossal bust so far. What does the administration know that we don't, huh?
The answer is a four-word phrase. First word, Shelley is pointing at all of us. Come on now.
Reporters.
We is correct. We, first word. Second word, two syllables. Shelley's holding her hands as if she's praying.
prayer.
No, not begging. Not church.
Oh, Catholic.
No.
Believe.
Believe. Believe on the nose. Second word, believe. We believe. Fourth word. Three syllables. First syllable sounds like she's acting afraid. No, come on.
Terror. Fear.
Fear. Fear. Sounds like fear. Fear.
Oh, mirror. That's Russian for peace.
Everything I say means peace.
Mirrors.
We believe in spirits.
Mirrors?
Not mirrors. Miracles. You got it. We believe in miracles. That's right. Thank you and good afternoon.
But Rubio has gone further. He oversaw the introduction of language in last year's Intelligence Authorization Act, which was passed in December, that stipulated that the Director of National Intelligence, along with the Secretary of Defense, had 180 days to produce a comprehensive report about what the government did and did not know about UFOs.
Part of the problem has been heretofore, nobody was collecting this information, and it wasn't being reported to any central authority. So to this day, we still don't know what we know.
Chris Mellon was a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for both the Clinton and Bush administrations. He helped break Leslie Kane's reporting on the Pentagon's secret program.
I don't think they're going to indicate anything to do with aliens. I don't think that hypothesis is going to be referenced at all.
Aliens! Every year at this time, the National Space Administration requires all aliens to register. Forms are available at your local post office. Those without forms must appear, however briefly, at the Bureau's astral offices on Nooker Street. Aliens, register now.
But I don't think they're going to be able to say that there's no potential threat to national security. I really doubt that the Russians or Chinese could be that far ahead of us. It looks like centuries ahead.
Nobody wants to use the word aliens. But Mellon says that if our adversaries really had the technology to build the objects that have been observed, we would know about it. So what does that leave?
There's no combustion engineering. There's no air intake. There's no exhaust. There's no wings. They fly at elevations from outer space down to the surface and then hovering. One of the things the task force is starting to do is wants to do is go back and look at some of these databases, which are actually designed to exclude aircraft that don't meet a conventional known profile, like a conventional missile or jet. So they won't even display that on the radar operator's scope, even though the system's detecting and recording something going, say, 7,000 miles an hour. So it's hard to come up with a hypothesis to explain that without considering the possibility that some other civilization is involved.
Places.